Suicide is preventable. Most suicidal individuals desperately want to live, they're just unable to see alternatives to their problems. If you're struggling or are worried about a loved one, please reach out. In the United States, you can call 1-800-273-TALK. Or you can visit IASP.info for suicide prevention hotlines around the globe. Somebody will be there for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You are never alone, no matter how dark or lonely things may seem. Call 1-800-273-TALK or visit IASP.info. That's 1-800-273-TALK or IASP.info.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk Alotta, Xerxes, the host of Proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dogs Bower. I'm gonna take a bath. Nothing's going to stop me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Top Games Podcast. Today, for this episode, we're going to be talking about Conquest of Elysium 4, which was nominated by somebody. Thank you, whoever you are. I think this was a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher, but for some reason we can't find who did this. We suspect that whoever nominated this game later decided that they hated our show and then deleted the review, but we got to do the game anyway, because a promise is a promise.
Like, I'll say straight up, none of us had heard of this game, so it's not like one of us accidentally slipped it into the list. A single one of us was like, we're just like, what the hell is this? We didn't do it.
Speaking of us? Who's with me to talk about Conquest of Elysium 4?
I'm Carl.
And I'm Texal Bear.
Welcome back.
Now, do we manage to say that it was developed by Illwinter Games? I don't know.
I was getting to that part.
Well, we don't usually introduce ourselves first.
Well, we don't really have it just happens whenever I feel like I remember it.
Okay.
So it was I'm going to do it, Dan. This is I'm hosting this ridiculous game. Okay, Illwinter Game Design is the developer. It was published by Illwinter Game Design and published for the PC on at least November 16th, 2015. That's the date that's on Steam. If you're looking for a Wikipedia page, good luck. There's one for Conquest of Elysium 2, oddly.
Has its own Wikipedia page. Not Wikipedia. Yeah, it's a Wikia. Right. It's about half empty. Some of the information is filled in, and a lot of crucial information is not. So, good luck.
If there's a game that needs a Wikia into itself.
That's why I went looking for it.
So, someone explain to our dear listeners what Conquest of Elysium 4 is, and I'll put right off the bat, my favorite thing about this game is it doesn't have, like, a second title. You'd be expecting it to be like, Conquest of Elysium 4, colon, the rise of Doomslayer something sword death man. But it's not. It's just Conquest of Elysium 4.
It's the fourth game in the Conquest of Elysium line of games. That's right.
Let's start with this. Where did this series get its start?
It was still a PC game. They've all been PC games. That's the thing.
PC, Mac, and Linux. For all of them.
It's sort of like it's like an indie game, but I think it started before the term indie games was really strongly coined. Like, it's a very it's a very PC, low number of people working on it effort. It's pretty clear from that. It's also
you can pretty much look at this and you can tell this is not published by EA or Ubisoft.
Yeah, and it also doesn't have that. Like a lot of the modern games seem to have like a flair of art in it, whereas this one it's quite visually dry. Even the fact that it's a fantasy game, you know, the art itself is pretty. Like, this is an elf.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's like, in the game design terms, it's what the old HG 101 web design was for, like, most of its life. Which yeah. I still kind of miss, because it's, like, it's so dreadfully, like, simple that it kind of kicks ass.
Yes, rip the old site. We, in a lot of ways, we prefer that. I think the reason we had to scrap it was, anyone listening to the podcast, they'd like to know why the website had to be scrapped. I think the old design was, you know the how websites get ranked? It was plummeting our rank because you could, like, the search engines are like, forget this. Like, they were.
We're not doing this. Yeah, what is this? Yeah. This is, yeah, it's like at a certain point, it's so crude as to look suspicious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, even the algorithm said, this is too ugly. I'm going to search a different website.
Yeah.
Surely there's a better, like.
That sucks.
Which is, yeah.
So.
Yeah, but. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to actually. Yeah, I'm trying to. So, Conquest of Elysium. For those of you who don't know Conquest of Elysium, you may just recognize the developer's other game, which is Dominions, which is a somewhat famous, like, big, grand strategy 4X game that I had seen mentioned here and there. It's quite popular in its genre because it's a genre that doesn't have that much representation because it's, like, a massive, like, grand conquest, you know, 4X type of strategy game. With, like, a really huge number of, like, units and playable races and classes and that kind of thing. Like, it's massive, and it's one of those games that are like, this game's impressive because it's huge. Literally everything else in it is almost superfluous to the fact that it's a giant-ass game. This one, Conquest of Elysium, this is the fourth one. I don't think they're considerably different to the extent that I've read the reviews for the third game and this game, and the people who review this game are like, if you like the others, you'll like this one, because it's basically the same, but additional features inserted here. And you got the other people, who are naturally the complete opposite, like, this is pointless, because 3 is just as good.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, because it doesn't seem that there's, like, a Conquest of Elysium 1, because Conquest of Elysium 2 is apparently just the 2.0 version of the original.
Up to the point that if you go on Mobi Games, and you check out the Conquest of Elysium series, it starts with 2.
and that was released in 1997. So it's like, it's almost a 7-year. No, wait. It's like, I think Elysium 3 looks like it came out in 2012. So it's actually a very long stretch
in the middle. They were working on those Dominion games that I mentioned. It's a small.
I think of those, we have 5 at the time. It should be noted that Conquest of Elysium 2 uses a Roman numeral and 3 uses an Arab numeral. So that's about the most radical change you have in that time.
Hey, that makes sense, because they are addicted to changing fonts in this game. It's like 6 fonts.
Yeah. Let's talk about the fonts.
So wait, let's go, talk about the game.
Yes. Let's dig in. So now I'm gonna give you my take on this. Right. As best I can tell from my baffling experience, is that Conquest of Elysium 4, the rise of Death Doom Man on Mount Terrible, is a, like, it's like a 4X game. It's like a fantasy, like a 4X game. Like, you know, you
it's explore, really similar to Monster of Magic. Like,
yeah,
really similar.
But then it's got some, like, kind of rogue like elements.
That's right.
And on top of that, it's apparently deliberately hideous. but there's something I kind of like about that.
It looks like it looks. Yes, that is. That is accurate.
So how is it different from, like, your 4X fantasy games of your?
Like, I mean, so the main thing, I guess, that this one is willing to do differently is, firstly, the battles themselves are auto-resolved in a way that you don't get any control ever, which I actually really genuinely appreciate. I don't really care that much for the kind of shoddy, you have to control every troop and a combat resolution takes, like, 6 days. Style of play that some of the bigger 4X games do. But yeah. Unlike, I think, the Civilization games, where often they're like, okay, well, in that case, we don't have combat. We just kind of throw these two things at each other, and one of them loses a bunch of things. You actually see the combat. It plays out in front of you, turn by turn, in probably the closest thing I could draw is almost a Dwarf Fortress sort of style of presentation where you get a massive open field with both sides just kind of running at each other, turn-based, turn-by-turn, so just step, 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 step. It's semi-real-time. And they just, like, use their spells, use their attacks, and the game shows you what's happening, but it auto-resolves, and you basically build your various stacks of units, as you do in a lot of 4X games. You just dump a bunch of units on a tile and move them around. But you don't get to do anything outside of that, so it very much focuses on the choosing what to build in terms of units and choosing where to send them. And that's kind of like the main game part. It hacks away at a lot of the stuff on the edges and a lot of stuff that I would say can bloat other games. In return for doing that, though, it's like, I'm going to cram a bunch of random crap in the stuff that you can do. Because there's still loads of things to learn. I think there's like 300, 400 units that make up the game across all of the classes, which is what the game refers to as the different races.
There's a lot of animals you can get, I think.
Yeah.
There's generally a lot of stuff because you have different ages. You have the Dark Ages, then you don't actually have ages that just progress. Instead, the different ages take place during different times of the history of Elysium. So you start in the Dark Ages, then advance to a more advanced age. At one point, you have the Imperial Age, but that's not the highest, because at one point, the Empire collapses. And then you have this post-Imperial Age, which is kind of a new Dark Age, but different from the original Dark Age.
So it like roughly mirrors like human history.
In some regards, yes. But it's just interesting to see that you have these different ages, and they aren't just, oh, we go from clubmen to swordsmen to whatever. They're actually quite different. It's not just an Age of Empires-style progression, which makes almost every age kind of interesting, and not just like more primitive version of the next.
What were you going to say, Cal?
I was going to say, it's important to note that the main thing I think that does is determines the... because you mentioned the roguelike elements, and that's a big part of it, is that the world itself is always Elysium. It's got deserts towards the, what I guess you would call the equator. It's got arctics towards, I don't know why this desert's towards the equator. I don't know, maybe that's a thing. It's got arctics towards the north, and in the middle is the sort of, you know, verdant green forests and stuff. And it just generates a Elysium, and how that is populated is dictated by the age. So, you know, you've got tons of neutral animals and monsters in some of the ages, but in others you have a lot of neutral humans and stuff, as you've sort of said. And what's really cool is that obviously it's different each time, so rather than going to different planets or whatever like some games might do, each one is rich and different, and it also balances out the strength of different classes, because some of them are more advantageous if there's lots of humans, and some of them are less advantageous. So this game has like this really weird like freewheeling attitude to balance that you may not, I guess, expect, because it doesn't seem to care if you play as a really broken side. I can't figure it out.
No, it seems some sides are definitely better than others, but it's very random in general. I played some games where I was able to just grab a couple of villages in the beginning and generate some good income, and there was this one game where I started and I immediately ran into 30 wolves. I thought, oh, that's a lot of wolves. But I could actually kill them because I combined all my starting armies. And then there was the other game where I ran into a couple of deer. Said, oh, that's not going to be a problem. Then turned out those are Irish deer. This, like, extinct elephant-sized deer. And they killed me immediately. I left.
Are those a real thing? Did they really
exist? That's a real thing, yeah. They went extinct, I think, 10,000 years ago. So a while ago, but not that long ago. And they just came into my village and took over. And it was just game over. The deer just
guess
says,
what? This house is a giant deer's house. Get out! Get out!
That's right. Yeah.
So that map entered the deer age, or the elk age. And there was no space for humans in that age.
Wow. Is there like a research tree or anything like that that we might associate with other 4X games?
That's the thing that one of the things it cuts out is it doesn't necessarily let you like a game like Master of Magic gives you the ability to build things. You know, you can build temples, you can build you know, barracks and you know, shrines and like carpentries and stuff. You know, like you can build individual things in cities. Like that's quite a common 4X thing. This one says, none of that. So you don't necessarily get new units as the game progresses. because you can't build things to get more units. I don't know if maybe some of the classes can. I could be contradicting myself here. But the main thing is that when you capture places, they can have stuff in their own structures. And that can open up units because other than your class's units, every turn the game just basically rolls a bunch of dice. I believe it rolls tons and tons of dice. You can read the manual for this. It's basically the game design document, but kind of like scratched out how you would actually achieve it and just what they were planning to do. It's kind of fun to read. So you'll like in an individual turn, it'll be like, mage has shown up. And the reason the mage has shown up is you control the wizard school. And if you don't control a wizard school, you won't have any mages show up. But if you do, then it'll roll wizards. Or if you have, like goblins under your control, I think maybe dwarves or something, sometimes those will show up and be like, hey, they're available to recruit. So, there isn't necessarily a tech tree, but having said that, your individual wizard, which is somewhat like Master of Magic, this will make a tiny bit more sense if you listen to a Master of Magic episode, but, basically you have powerful units, which are spellcasters. Pretty much every side has some sort of, spellcastery lord or some sort of, major character that, can be classed up. And when they class up, they get spells, and some of those spells are summon spells, and they can summon more powerful units as a direct result of those spells. And if you lose that unit, you actually, you know, trash their ability to summon, so you don't actually have a kind of consistent tech tree in the same way that, you know, you build up your empire, and then you get more stuff, and then you can just build the best units. There's actually, like, a weird sort of up and down to this game if you end up losing your important units or have a major town that you were using to summon things from captured. You know, it's a little odd. Once you sort of figure out what it's doing, it's fine. One side, which I will mention, I'm sorry, I don't remember their exact name, but they're basically crazy ass religious people. And what they do is they are basically opening the gates of heaven in order to, bring about the coming of basically like God, but the way that I think there are seven gates, it kind of sounds like you're opening the seven gates of hell, but basically every time they open a gate, more and more units from that fraction start arbitrarily popping up on the map. So they get more and more powerful units just showing up if you open these gates and you can't close them again. I think you can give yourself an instant game over if you open all seven gates, because God is not happy. But it's weird. The whole
Why
game.
Are you bothering me?
Yeah.
I'm in the shower.
It's like
idiots.
It's tough because basically
sending
the game's
a plague of gigantic deer right now.
You can control those deer. I think one of the sides
you
is
can.
The deer.
Yeah. I just looked it up. These things are the most metal-looking deer ever. They're like, they have like moose-like antlers that are all like jagged and pointy, like a crown of like iron metalness. It looks like if like the band Tool had pet deer, they would look like that.
Some of the units look really cool, but there's no animation really, and they're really small on the map sometimes. So you got to kind of squint.
Everything's kind of represented by kind of squares.
Yeah.
They all look like counters.
Is things, I think, like the deer and the elephants and some of the larger units actually trample. So they just kind of move in combat and they just push things out of their way doing damage. And there's another trait in there. Some units can eat other units. And if you kill that unit really quickly, obviously you don't have any control, so maybe your unit successfully kill it quickly, then the unit they ate will actually pop out mostly unharmed. But if they don't... If they don't succeed in doing it very quickly, your guy's dead.
It should be noted
pretty crazy.
That this game here has pretty much all the units you could imagine. It's a little bit like the Dungeons & Dragons monster manual. There's usual white animals. There's beholders. There's like Lovecraftian sea people. There's giant enemy crabs. Yep. And there's everything. There's a ton of them. There's also some monsters from various folklores. I think I met a Bakemono at once from Japanese folklore. That's like a goblin-style creature.
Yeah, there's
so this,
the whole
this just
faction
throws in pretty
that is
much
like
everything.
Tengus and like ghost samurai. I can't remember the name. There's a specific name for like Onis and stuff that's like that, but yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, and there's Aztecs too, that's right.
why not?
Why wouldn't there be Aztecs?
What?
Yeah, I can't think of a good reason why not.
No, like, they've basically, they opened the book on mythology slash history stuff and were just like, do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. Like, just everything is in there. You can play as a faction that is illusionists, and so they carry around giant mirrors that summon monsters, and if the mirrors are destroyed, the monsters are destroyed.
If they summon monsters, they're not really illusionists. They're like just...
Oh, no, they're illusions, because if the mirror breaks, I believe the monsters just disappear.
But if the illusion can kill you...
Well, your mind makes it real.
Oh, I see.
It's Matrix rules.
Isn't that the real monster is in your own mind the whole time?
It could be.
Something to think about.
The Lovecraftian Elder Beasts certainly are mind flayers and stuff.
Yeah, somebody opened up a portal from the public domain on this game, I think.
Also, there's some funny humor in it. Well, funny is like, maybe not ha-ha, but like funny like, huh.
There's humor adjacent content. Yes.
Like, apparently the dwarves in this are not dwarves. They are actually theorized to be sentient ant people. It's apparently, there's lots of flavor text if you read the individual units. They all have, like, you know, the big-ass, like, paragraph or two paragraphs of what the unit, you know, is. And it sounds like a lunatic writing it. Like, it's written in-universe by someone who is studying the, you know, species. Even if you're playing as the species, it reads as, like, a person studying them. So, like, they're talking about the dwarves and how they're like, yes, well, the dwarves actually have, like, a second or third set of, like, vestigial arms that are just hidden inside of their, like, skeleton. And so they argue that they're actually sentient ants and not actually people.
Do they have beards? Are they ants with beards?
Yeah, they have beards. They're just regular dwarves, but the game kind of... they're not regular dwarves, because they're all male except the queen. There is a queen, so they do actually act like ants. It's weird. And I think the author of the game, or one of them, hates elves, because I don't think there's actually an elvish type of race in there. There's no real, you know, like, there's nothing like that. I think they've got a real, they've got a hater.
Sounds like a bizarrely specific bone to pick.
Yeah, because you got, like, a bunch of tree people, bunch of forested people, you got druids, you got
Aztecs, yeah.
Yeah.
You got all of that.
Stuff from Greek mythology.
Yeah.
Dryads, we got naiads, we got the illusion people, we got the ant dwarves, we got... What about elves? Shut up!
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Elves. You've got walking mushrooms.
We got walking mushrooms.
Yeah, the fungus people! They're in
there.
What
about dark elves? No dark elves either! An elf's an elf, and they all suck! Conquest of Elysium 4. Let's rank it.
Okay.
Or is there any other thing that
One thing we have to talk about is the roguelike element. So Cal mentioned these leaders. And they're not just special units. You can't just move around your squads like that. You need a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And once your final leader falls, you lose, no matter how many units you have left. So you can recruit leaders more or less randomly. They just pop up and it says, Herbert the Wizard is now recruitable. So you can recruit him if you have the money for that or the resources in general. And the resource system is simple. There's gold for most of it, but you also have other resources such as sacrifice, which is kind of like a magical resource, and iron. And those are a little bit the roguelike element, because you move them over the map, it's turn-based, you fight other monsters, but essentially a roguelike where you have an army attached to you. But that's it for the most part, I have the feeling. And you can have several characters, so if once you've recruited four or five of them, you're probably not going to lose instantaneously.
Yeah, you most likely what you'll do, and you'll have to do this, is because... as we mentioned, there are random units on the map, and yes, the deers are hunting for you. They are genuinely coming to kill you. If you do not leave... If you do not leave units in your cities, a deer can enter the city and literally be, this is mine now. And you can't stop it, even if it's your major metropolitan.
You can't reason with the giant deer.
No matter how many people live in that city, if you didn't leave a single guard in that city, that deer wins automatically. Generally speaking, you'll probably have your home base that you start in. You'll probably leave a unit or two in there, if not a leader or a trooper or something, you know. So that makes sense. Also, if you're trying to take fortified cities instead of it just being an open plain where people hit each other, you actually have a big-ass wall, and your units start on one side of the wall, and the opposition starts on the other side of the wall. And if you're defending, the enemy actually have to march up to the walls, and then either fly over them, if they have one of the many different levitational type of abilities, or they have to break down the gate. And the whole time, your archers and ranged units can just be pelting them with, like, a height advantage and that kind of thing. Part of the reason I mention this is you build catapults and you have siege weaponry and stuff in them. It actually fires the siege weaponry before the fight starts, which is kind of cool. It's not something that I see all the time. It's a kind of distinct phases between, like,
right.
You know, the catapults do a full barrage for several turns, and then your units go in.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it probably is more or less what people would actually do. I don't think there was like, all right, we're going to send all our dudes in, and we're going to shoot the catapults off at the same time, yes. And you guys are just going to have to watch out, okay? But
yeah,
trust
it should
me,
be noted that the AI is very reasonable. If you have archers, they will be behind your spearmen and cavalry.
Yes.
And your spellcasters in the back, so the AI actually arranges units in a sense... in a way that makes sense. And once you get encircled, the AI will also move units around you. And so they will form a circle around your casters, then your archers, and then your melee units. So it's actually pretty decent, and it looks like watching... Well, not like watching an actual battle, because it's still just counters being flipped around. But it's kind of interesting to look at.
It's entertaining, and I say that I like it quite a bit, because the AI doesn't cheat. It is under the same rules as you. Mm-hmm. You don't feel like... Because I know with some of the auto resolution... options in some of these types of games, it feels like the AI is grinding it to you. Like,
yeah,
you send like 600 units, they have like three people, and you lose, and you're just like,
yeah,
what?
You also see everything. It's not just, oh, I'm going to send my like 12 spearmen against this one Irish elk. Oh, I lose. Okay, what happened? Nobody knows, but you lost.
Yeah, you actually get to watch it, and it means that even though the game has like a trillion spell effects and units. You can pause it and actually read the units and their spells. So if you're like, da, 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 why did I lose 3/4 of my dudes? You can check.
It's kind of like then like you play like, you remember Master of Orion?
Yeah.
Where like you can do the battles. You don't have to do auto resolution on it, but you're stupid if you don't. Because like, first of all, it'll take forever. And although it is possible in the games like that for a skilled player to win a battle that the AI wouldn't be able to win. It's like if you're in that kind of predicament, like you're kind of playing the game wrong. Like the whole way to win those games is to just dominate your enemies with like overwhelming power. And so it really, but it's nice to be able to see everything as it's happening.
Yeah, because you never feel cheated, and it lets you actually learn how maybe, oh, I probably should have had more melee units, or so that. You know, you actually can learn how to better build your armies outside of the combat, which is good feedback. Like, that's pretty important. A lot of these games, you're just like, I don't know why I lost, but I definitely lost all my units. And this one helps quite a bit. I really like fact that the AI is freaking busted, where random things that are bad, like, there's multiple planes in this universe in Conquest of Elysium 4. It's the main new feature for Conquest of Elysium 4, as I understand, is you've got, like, you basically got like hell and not quite hell, but where the spirits live. Like you got like magical plane. Don't necessarily go there. You've got where all the abyssal creatures live. You got all these different planes, and sometimes they can break through to regular plane, and you can also visit them depending on your side. And if you're a species that doesn't deal with the planes, then you just won't. Like you never go to them with that character set. It's weird and interesting, and the game just keeps like. Again, it's the roguelike thing. Like, it just keeps puttering along. Maybe this game, a gate to Demon World will open, and then you better go deal with that, or the entire of Elysium is going to be flooded with demons. And so I'm running around trying to close this gate to freaking Spiritville, and the AI, right, is just like, oh, I'm just going to take your crap. And I'm like, damn it, stop taking my
stuff. I'm doing this for all of us.
I'm trying to save the world here. And it's like, well, I'm taking your mind.
Magic world. Yeah.
Yeah. Cal was desperately trying to seal off the gates to the giant deer dimension before they could all break through.
There's no time. We must save us all.
We got to rank it. We got to rank it. Like, where do we want to put it?
So we have at 276, we have Master of Magic. And at 301, we have Ogre Battle 64.
Well, I personally think above Ogre Battle 64.
Yes, I found out something about Ogre Battle 64 that made me real mad, by the way. This is a follow-on from the episode. If you don't play the game exactly right, you get a dog shit ending where your character gets freaking basically murdered for being a dickhead. And you have no way to understand that is what's going to happen. None.
This game doesn't do that, right?
No. Nope. I mean,
so,
this game
okay.
Just, like,
so Conquest of Elysium 4 it might use like Arial and a black letter font on the same like screen, which is a little bit of a sin, but at least you can read them because it's not on the N64.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It doesn't matter what font they use on N64. It's like, it's all like, you know, ITC blurry.
I like how gung-ho this game is about including so much random crap. I will say that despite it sounding like, oh, wow, it's the greatest Mega Mix ever or something, they are kind of samey. Like, that's what's going to happen. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of the mechanics are pretty similar. Like, sacrificing to summon is suspiciously similar to using blood to summon and that kind of thing. Like, it's like, oh, I see these mechanics are literally the same, but you've changed the name of the thing that's, you know, involved. But there's cool stuff. You can play as like a necromancer and then be like, well, gonna become a lich now, or you can become a vampire or something. And you got like a few different like paths that particular class can take, but some of them can't, depending on some of the species are just regular people.
How does this translate into like a ranking suggestion?
We've got Master of Magic, and I like Master of Magic, but I think this is actually a really good effort at kind of trying to balance that with being almost approachable. It's almost impossible for a 4X game to be approachable because they just have so much upfront content that you have to understand. But I think between the like rogue element, meaning that you never really, it's like, well, you could randomly do better or you could randomly do worse. It's kind of a bit more interesting than just dry numbers dragging you down every time. And it's light enough that you can actually kind of go, oh, if I had done this, I would have been doing better. Like, you can actually find pieces that would have made you do better. You don't have to build a bunch of roads and build a very specific tech tree or else you get turfed in the, like, after 2 hours. It's good like that.
Yeah, well, we got Dune 2 here as well. That's at 183. It's below Tyrion 2000, above Shenmue.
So yeah. That's my taxes department.
Yes, for my case for ranking this below Dune 2 is because Dune 2 was more revolutionary. That was kind of a milestone. Conquest of Elysium 4 is not. It's very iterative, which isn't bad.
No.
You kind of want that. You want to refine your games. I think that's part of the reason why it feels generally quite polished, because it is the fourth iteration of what is mostly the same.
I will say game. The music is absolutely horrible in this. It's just freaking awful. Sorry if this was actually written by someone on the team. It sounds like stock effects. And that does remind me that one of the spell sounds is literally a stock effect of a didgeridoo. And I gotta tell you, whenever you summon a skeleton and it plays a didgeridoo sound, I'm like, what? That's what? Didgeridoos do not summon the dead. I cannot stress that
but
enough.
But if any instrument could...
I gotta tell you, if you really want to know, like,
it's probably not the pan flute, you know what I mean?
I realize, actually. I gotta go on a deep dive and say that, like, I think the didgeridoo at best would drive off spirits. Right.
I'm looking at, is it perhaps in, like, more, like, Yume Nikki territory? Like, kind of, like, weirdly...
Yeah,
compelling, but
it's
very low.
Below Yume Nikki, we got Creatures, which is a weird, compelling game as well.
How about we put it right between the two? Just okay. What's the difference?
Let's do that.
Sounds good to me.
That's where it goes. So, Conquest of Elysium 4. Hey, check it out. You know, this could be your thing. If it's
it actually
not your thing,
could be.
But that's the thing. It's like if this is your thing, you're going to be very grateful for us talking about it and the mystery person who nominated it, for bringing it to our attention, because we would not have known about this, I don't think.
This is one. I'm really happy this one was nominated. I think I was going to hate it, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is Monster Magic, but a little different. I'm very happy now.
Okay.
Check it out, or giant elks are going to take over your house.
They're just going to move in. They're going to tear up your couch cushions, make a little elk nest.
At the door.
And if you think they can go up the stairs without knocking off all the pictures with their gigantic antlers, I have sad news for you, my friend. That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HGDiscord.
Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.